We've got John Livermore. Now, John, transport specialist. I called you a transport historian. Just a bloke to talk to about transport generally.
Sure.
And yeah, I know you talk about transport across the board, whether it be rail, road or whatever. But this morning I want to talk aviation, and I want to talk aviation history. And we're talking Harold Gatty. Now, you'd really hope that was a name that jogged a memory in so many Tasmanians' minds. Yet I suspect there'd be a few scratching their heads saying, who was Harold Gatty? The Prince of Navigators, and with a reputation far beyond Tasmania, in so many ways changed aviation to this day. I'm sure there's a ripple effect of what Gatty developed, inaugurated, documented that we feel today.
Well, I mean, I think the only tangible thing about Harold Gatty we've got in Tasmania is the monument, is the Harold Gatty monument in Campbelltown.
And people are wondering, oh, I don't think I've ever seen that. Yes, you have. You've driven past it 3 million times.
Exactly.
It's in the park at the Launceston end of Campbelltown there.
Yeah.
The big circle being navigated, circumnavigated. Well, that's the Earth, and it's being circumnavigated by a plane, which is what Gatty did in 1931 with pilot Wiley Post. And that was made by my mate Tom Roper, who I hope is listening this morning.
Right. Well, I mean, all credit to Tom Roper, but the whole problem about the monument at the end of Campbelltown is that there's virtually nothing else there. It doesn't tell you anything at all about Harold Gatty. The best monument to Harold Gatty actually is a book by Bruce Brown, if I can mention that one. Prince of Navigators. Now, Bruce Brown actually was in Hobart for a while with ASIC. He's now in Canberra, and I picked up his book some years back, found it fascinating, and I gave a talk to U3A about 2 years ago, had a good roll-up, and since then I've spruced it around the place, including Campbelltown itself, the Heritage Centre, and they are very interested in setting up a Harold Gatty room.
Mm. All right, well, let's talk about the Tasmanian origins of Harold Gatty then. So would you like to do that?
Briefly, yes. Yeah. He was born in Campbelltown on January the 6th, 1903. His father was head of the local government school. He went to St Virgil's in 1916 as a boarder, and he went to the Jervis Bay Naval College in 1917. And interestingly enough, he was not a star pupil. And the most problems he had, which is ironic given what happened later, was with mathematics and navigation.
Goodness.
Now, as it happened, by the end of the First World War, there were very few demands for officers in the Navy. So he joined Patrick Steamship Company in 1920 as an apprentice, and he went on a vessel plying between Australian ports and New Zealand. And then 3 years later, he joined the United Steamship Company of New Zealand and got on posted on an oil tanker working between New Zealand and California. Now, the interesting thing is, given that he wasn't good at navigation at college, he studied celestial navigation by himself, and he also used what he called natural navigation, things like the smell of coconuts, guano, and even new mown hay, which he smelt 80 miles out from New Zealand.
A very good
nose. Now,
this
is interesting because he had a great admiration for the Polynesians, who, of course, were very good natural navigators. Now, he had a real problem, of course, getting work at this time after he left United Steamship Company. He married in 1927 and he applied for a visa to get into the US. And he arrived on Christmas Eve, 1927, but he found that his ticket, his papers, were only valid for the British Empire, so he couldn't actually get a job as a working captain or seafarer.
So this was just him looking for work, the movement.
Oh, looking
to
for
the
work.
States.
I mean, yeah. let's face it, this is the height of the Depression.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
After working on a private yacht, which Spalding owned, that's the famous golf implement manufacturer,
they're
he owned
clubs.
A new business. A navigation school based in Los Angeles. Now, this is the sort of complete circle. Someone who is not good at maths, fails or was very poor at navigation at college, but actually working by himself. He then sets up this navigation school. Now, at this stage, of course, aviation's in its infancy. It's very much sort of fly by the seat of your pants stuff. And he operated for the Pioneer Instrument Company as an agent, and he came in contact with all these aviators around Los Angeles. Air navigation was very primitive. He ran this pilot training school in San Diego, and he teamed up with a Lieutenant Commander Weems, who was a serving U.S. naval officer. And he worked to improve what were then called Weems Tables of Calculated Position Lines. These were used to actually find out where you were.
And so
they were used by Admiral Byrd when he flew at the top of the Antarctic, and also by Herbert Wilkins, an Australian, in the Antarctic itself.
Because we should underline, John, and I'm assuming the technology was exactly as that used by ships at sea. You use a sextant to take a sight.
Well, you could, but, I mean, if you were flying in a cloud, it wouldn't do you any good.
Yeah.
You know, if you could get a sun fix. So apart from improving the Weems curves, Gatty looked to what all ship navigators through history have, or certainly in the last couple of hundred years, understand. That's dead reckoning. Which at one point actually saved his life and the life of Harold Bromley when they later on he attempted a Pacific crossing in Japan. So he invented the air sextant and then the aerochronometer. This was to overcome the effect of rapid aircraft speed on a calculation, because obviously that was an issue. He also built what he called the Gatty drift sight, to fix determination ground speed of an aircraft and the angle of drift, where you get a crosswind effect. Mm. Now, all these things that he developed are the basis of a modern automatic pilot.
Yes.
So he should be given credit for that.
Yes.
That he brought all these together. If you were flying a plane at this time and you got reasonably good weather, you would take ground sightings, roads, rail, rivers. He did that, but he got all these other aids that he developed. Weems published his textbook and gave a lot of credit to Gatty for the data. And in 1929, Gatty flew as a navigator with Roscoe Turner from Glendale in California to Roosevelt Field in New York in a Lockheed Vega, and he made the time in 19 minutes... 19 hours, 51 minutes, and 2 hours short of a record. But it proved you could make a commercial flight.
Mm.
And that was his first experience as a long-distance navigator. He also acted as a navigator to a Canadian flyer, Harold Bromley, in 1930, to cross the North Pacific from the U.S. coast to the islands of Japan. Now, he flew from Japan, and they got on a leg of about 2,000 miles, and they hit in deep fog, and he used dead reckoning skills to get him back to Japan.
Mm.
And he spent 6 weeks in hospital.
Crikey.
Because but most of this, you know, you haven't got heated cockpits in those days. Now, his big breakthrough, I guess, and the one that sort of made him famous, was the meeting up with Wiley Post in 1931. Now, Wiley Post had only got one eye. He'd lost it in around an oil rig, because he used to fly around spotting likely spots for oil drilling. And he'd been a bit too close to an oil drill and lost an eye. He met Gatty and he offered him the position of a planned flight by himself in the Winnie Mae, which was an aircraft, a Lockheed Vega 5B with a cruising speed of about 160 miles an hour, and an around-the-world flight.
And to be the first human to ever do so.
The first around-the-world flight. At this stage, the only really well-known air machine that had gone around the world was the Hindenburg.
Yes.
It wasn't, you might define it as an aircraft, but it certainly wasn't a plane.
The Hindenburg, an airship, of course.
Now, this enabled the plane, because it had a supercharger, to get to 16,000 feet, and it would use the jet stream, which Wiley Post Understood. Now, he's the first pilot to recognise you get up to 16,000 feet, you can use the jet stream. In other words, it's flowing east. So if you're going around the world, you start off, you go east. Mm. You go east and then come back.
Yep.
So he was one of the first people, Wiley Post, the first person to sort of pilot sync this out.
Yes, that's right. And he and Harold Gatty, Wiley Post, became the first humans to circumnavigate the globe and became heroes in the US.
Absolutely.
And you have photos here of the ticker tape parade through New York. Yeah. I mean, it's extraordinary.
There are 8 staging posts altogether. And Bruce Brown's account of from documentation of how this went is quite scarifying. It ranged from being only about 50 feet above the Atlantic waves at one point. The most scary part, no doubt, was ending up in Moscow and being forced to have a very, very long dinner after a flight out from Berlin, which involved vodka and lots of food, being stuck in Siberia and getting the plane pulled out by a tractor, and also ending up in Alaska at one point and finding that the propeller in fact was damaged and that they had to get it sort of fixed.
And you wonder what sort of temperatures they're experiencing.
Because it
wouldn't have been a heated cockpit.
No. And you look at the pictures of them when they set out. I think they were both dressed in suits. No flying suit at all. Mm. And they had about a dollar each in their pocket.
Yes.
Now, you and I, you know, if we were going around the world, of course there'd be passports. Yeah. Yeah.
So, John, here we have a Tasmanian who is one of the two first humans to fly around the world.
That's right.
To circumnavigate the globe. Now, I know you've got copious notes here to come. Just can we praise, because we're going to run out of time here, of his career? Because he refused to take American citizenship, didn't he?
Yes. Now, what happened to him was that the Americans, of course, embraced him. He was honoured by the president. And basically what happened was that he realised that his career was going to be in America. Now, the fact that he stayed in the States for such a long time and worked with the Americans and worked with at one stage with Pan Am didn't actually make him popular with the Australian government. Mm. The Australian government at the time was boots and all in with the Brits.
Yes.
You know, imperial interests were foremost, even though Australia was an independent sovereign nation. The mindset was different. The mindset was still on empire, and it was still on the British interest. Therefore, the Americans were a Pacific power. They, of course, had got their own naval interests, and they also had, of course, key aviation interests in setting up commercial links across the Pacific.
And just to backtrack a little, and there's an irony, and he was an advisor to the US Air Force during the Second World War, developed their navigation systems.
That's right.
Which in turn were adopted by the Australians, and these in turn were instituted by a Tasmanian advising the Americans.
Exactly. He was appointed to the specially created civilian position of senior engineer in the US Air Corps. Mm. Now, a lot of people thought he'd actually got US citizenship, but he never did. He always denied it. But the Australian government treated him as if he'd sort of deserted the country, which is really very narrow-minded. There's some extraordinary nasty internal correspondence within government quarters at that time, really rubbishing what he does, regarding him as an agent of the US, which of course will upset British interests. I mean, the air link, you see, was with Britain.
Mm.
And the New Zealanders were on the outer. They wanted a link from the US, which Gatty eventually got them. And in 1937, the New Zealanders finally got a link across the Pacific. And what Gatty had done, upsetting the British and also the Australians, was to actually upset the claimed key islands across the Pacific that the British claimed. Giving those rights to the US so that Pan Am could actually stage flights.
Transport specialist John Livermore in my studio. We're talking about Tasmanian Harold Gatty and how little, I suppose, we remember him here in Tasmania after all these achievements. Okay, we've got the memorial in Campbelltown, which I dare say most people flash by at, well, 60 kilometres an hour because they're dutiful motorists. But not many would stop and read what's there, and there isn't a lot to read anyway. In June this year, we celebrated, or maybe should have celebrated, 80 years since that first circumnavigation of the globe by Gatty and Wiley Post.
Yeah.
What else should we be doing in Tasmania? Because he was born in Campbelltown. You didn't mention the fact, and I love it, that his grandfather was transported here for being a highwayman in the 1840s. Yeah. How more Tasmanian need you be, you know? Convict origins as well. So we need more, don't we?
Yeah.
Because there is certainly more in the United States, which was never, as you have underlined, his adopted homeland. He was always Tasmanian. There are descendants here in Tasmania.
Sure.
And how do we find out? How do we embrace the story of Gatty here?
Well, I think that you're going to give Campbelltown Heritage Museum credit. They haven't got a lot of cash to play around with, but they are very interested in getting a Harold Gatty history room set up. There was a meeting on the 26th of August, which involved a sculptor from Victoria, Barry Smith, who wants to set up a sculpture park of about 250 model planes, representing Australian aviation history, and also to going right back to the Wright brothers. Now, that is a project that hasn't got off the ground yet. There's when I was at the meeting, there was a architect designer called Richard Hall who brought in a display that he built, that he'd made for his architecture course at in Launceston some time back, and it was a display hangar. Now, in Oklahoma City, they've got the Wiley Post hangar, and they've got all the memorabilia. I think they've got the Winnie Mae there. But unfortunately, I was in contact with them only about a couple of months ago, and they've actually had to put everything on hold because they've run out of money. Okay. Now, this is going to be the key thing.
The Winnie Mae still exists.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
if we should
be in Tasmania.
If we can get the money to set up an aviation centre, the Northern Midlands Council is their community officer Lorraine Green is quite keen on the idea, but as she knows, and everybody else who's got to get money in Tasmania knows, where does the money come from? Now, it's not impossible. I might mention here, too, that I'm working with Sonia Finlayson of Forest Productions on a film about Harold Gatty. It would make a very good documentary. Bruce Brown's book is a great source, and anyone who's really interested in finding out more about Gatty, as I have, would do very well to read Bruce Brown's book. But in the meantime, I think we've got to get decent signage up around that memorial at the top end of Campbelltown so that people do stop and have another look and get to know more about Harold Gatty.